Welcome to Think UDL, the Universal Design for Learning podcast, where we hear from the people who are designing and implementing strategies with learner variability in mind. I'm your host, Lillian Nave, and I'm interested in not just what you're teaching, learning, guiding, and facilitating, but how you design and implement it and why it even matters.
Welcome to episode 123 of the Think UDL podcast, AI and Ethics with James Basham. Dr. James Basham is a professor in the Department of Special Education in the School of Education and Human Sciences at the University of Kansas in Lawrence, Kansas. He is the founder of the Universal Design for Learning Implementation and Research Network, or UDL-IRN. His research is focused on the implementation of UDL, STEM education, learner-centered design, innovation, and technology in human learning. He has received and managed over $27 million in successful research and development funding. He's well-published and has given hundreds of talks and serves on various boards for journals, companies, and organizations, and is the principal investigator on various projects, including CIDL, the Center for Innovation, Design, and Digital Learning. In this episode, we discuss AI and UDL in higher education and how AI relates to competency-based learning and various forms of assessment. We also discuss personalized learning and the ethics of how AI impacts the teaching and learning experience in higher ed. And finally, we also discuss Jamie's work as the founder and principal investigator of CIDL. Thank you for listening to this conversation on the Think UDL podcast.
Thank you to our sponsor, TextHelp, a global technology company helping people all over the world to understand and to be understood. It has led the way in creating innovative technology for the workplace and education sectors, including K-12 right through to higher education for the last three decades. Discover their impact at text.help/learnmore. That's LEARNMORE. So I'd like to welcome Dr. James Basham, that I've always called Jamie, actually, when I see you in conferences. So I want to welcome you, Jamie, to the Think UDL podcast today.
Well, hey, thank you for having me, Lillian. It's great. It's been a long time coming. I've listened to so many of them, and it's nice to kind of be here.
Yeah, I've had you on my list for, I will say, years, and that's my fault because it's actually been like four different topics I wanted to talk to you about. So finally, we're going to get into kind of UDL and artificial intelligence after our most recent conference where I got to see you talk. So let me start off with my first question, which is, what makes you a different kind of learner?
Well, that's always a great question, right? So what makes me different? I'm different as in multiple ways, and I'm guessing people who know me really well and people who work for me and with me will have lots of comments. But I was actually identified with learning disability, dyslexia, in the mid-70s. So I'm a little bit older than some. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of one of the first kids that received special education services under what we know as today's IDEA. Mm-hmm. And that continued all the way through fourth grade, which was technically fifth grade year for me because I did first grade twice.
Okay.
And then supposedly I was cured. We moved states and I was cured. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing that
was
happens.
I was like the only kid that they've ever cured with dyslexia. So that's kind of my starting point. And that of course, is something that stays with you, mm-hmm. even though you're cured, supposedly.
Yeah, right.
But it stays with you. And then I just went through school from fourth grade on, knowing I was a different kind of, actually having been identified. And then that kind of continues on. So the way that I associate with things and the supports I use in my day-to-day life are things that I've kind of picked up throughout the years, either doing my own research on it, you know, or learning through classes and stuff. But it's you know, so I am definitely a different kind of learner. But I, as we all know, we're all different, right? So the variability of learning is there for everyone. I'm very much into, you know, I'm kind of nerdy too. I'm very much into, you know, understanding the learning process and STEM and STEAM, if you will. I'm kind of geeking out on things all the time. I'm also a big historian. I love reading, you know, biographies on historical figures and then things like that. So I'm always nerding out over something. So, yeah.
An insatiable curiosity, I've seen, at least in your
work. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thanks. Which, I'm glad that shows.
Yes, it does. And it, yeah, I certainly, like, I follow you on the publication sites. Like, here's another article by James Basham. Like, whoa, another one. He keeps on, discovering and researching all of these incredible things. So, yeah,
actually and there's some new stuff that's going to be coming out. That's pretty mind boggling. But anyhow, we can talk about that another time.
Oh my gosh. It'll be like four more episodes. I'll have to schedule.
It's on space design. We'll see.
Yeah. Ooh, wow. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. See, that was like originally several years ago when, we're talking about classroom spaces and all of that. Yeah. Okay. Right. So, focus, Lillian. Here I go. So I was fortunate enough to know recently we were at Virginia Tech, and you looked at the future of AI and UDL in higher education. And one of the points you made was based on a Pew Research Center analysis that mentioned about 20% of jobs in America in the future, near future, may be replaced or at least greatly assisted in their most important activities by artificial intelligence. And I wanted to ask you what you thought. What does that mean for us in higher education as we are preparing our students for that life beyond college?
That's such a great question. You know, and speaking of some of my research and work, I mean, it's something I've been writing about AI and integrating AI into some of my thinking and some of my projects really for the last 10 years. And so, in fact, I remember putting out a publication on supporting students with disabilities and preparing them for the workforce. And I think the publication came out, I think the chapter came out in 2019 or something like that. But within that chapter, the initial chapter of it went into the fact that, you know, when we have kind of a transdisciplinary or interdisciplinary sort of thought process, and we have AI coming together, some of the biogenetic stuff going on and biosciences, that's really going to transform things. And I wrote this whole big intro up, and it happened to be right around the same time that a scientist in China had genetically modified, you know, went against the global ban on this, and genetically modified two babies, and so they wouldn't catch the HIV virus. And at the time, I wrote it up, and it was in the chapter, and I used it as kind of the soft opening for the chapter, if you will. Like, you know, here's the future, and this is something as educators in higher education and in K-12 education we have to start thinking about. And so it went out for a review, and the review came back, and the editor said, well, the reviewers really didn't like the opening. They didn't see how this, genetic modification stuff is related to the future. It's not something we really have to worry about, you know, this sort of thing. And I just chuckled, but they said, can you take that part out? We really like the rest of it, though. And it's not related to learning, because they thought it was just related to HIV. And I said, okay, well, so I did the modification as we all have to do in our edits and such. Come to find out right around that same time, it kind of came out that, you know, as a side effect of these genetic modifications, the kids are going to be able to learn faster. Right? So that's the side effect.
Really?
And so, of course, I chuckled at that. Yeah. So I say that because this is something that's been going on a long time. And I think many of us in higher ed and even K-12, and I know you're focused on higher ed, but have been kind of overlooking this, what we initially started calling about 10 years ago, the fourth industrial revolution, and how AI was related to that. But now we're in the midst of it, and people are starting to say, oh my gosh, we maybe should start paying attention to this stuff. And yeah. So what does it mean for us in higher education, for the students in life beyond college? Well, I mean, we can obviously say it's going to impact the classroom and the way that we're preparing and educating and assessing students. And this is where things like universal design for learning come into play. Because, you know, the biggest thing I've been talking about lately with reporters and such, as many of us have been, is we have people cheating because they're using ChatGPT or other things to write papers. Right. And I kind of laugh at that. And I said, well, that's not our real biggest issue. The biggest issue actually is much larger than using ChatGPT to write papers. This is really going to have, what we have to recognize is that while our initial concept, our initial thoughts are around how do we use this AI in the world that we are in today, and with the same concepts of learning, with the same concepts of work, with the same concepts of what it means to be educated. If we're trying to put it into that place, we're kind of stopping way too short. Because just like the internet and the World Wide Web really transformed the way we engage with one another, enabled broadcasting, for instance, to take place between two individuals at very little cost as compared to what it was would have cost, you know, 20, 30 years ago. I mean, it has really transformed society. The web has transformed society. And I would argue that AI is going to have a greater impact on society than what the web has had up to this point in society. That we're really looking at the AI as a basic infrastructure sort of thing that we have to be prepared to use in all aspects of our life. So what does it mean? What does it mean for those of us in higher education as we prepare students for the future? It means that I think initially, like right now, every university, every school within the university should be having conversations around not will AI impact us, but how will it impact us? And then how do we how will it transform the human experience? And then what is our role in the future? And for some people, the role might be a step back, it may be a step forward, it may be a step to the side. I think we all have to come to terms with the fact that society is probably going to change. Not probably.
Yes.
Society will change.
Yeah, it always is. Yeah.
Right. And it's a continual, right? But I think we have to have those sort of questions. So, for instance, I'm in a school of education and human sciences in the Department of Special Education. You know, we have been talking about this for a couple of years, but now it's like coming out to larger and larger groups across the school. And we're having very deep sort of conversations and around this. Some of the conversations are, you know, over coffee and donuts, where we're just kind of having informal conversations and getting to how are you using this in your classroom already? How are you using large language models, for instance, in your classroom? To larger conversations of, you know, what does the educator workforce need to look like in the future? What are things that we need to be doing now to prepare for that? how does this impact, you know, the classes we're teaching? How does it impact the way we're assessing students, the way we're educating students? And so these are really sort of deep conversations that every discipline and field across the university should be having. The idea that, you know, the idea that we're, that some people, and you know, I've colleagues I've talked to around the, about this, that, you know, some people want to just say, well, you know, I'm concerned about it, you know, impacting the way students are using it to write, and I don't want them to do that, so I banned it in my classroom.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it's kind of laughable at this point. It's kind of laughable at this point, because it really just, it can't really be banned unless you go back completely to, you know, paper and pencil sort of task. And then I would actually argue that in the near
and that
near
puts
future,
in a lot of barriers. Yeah,
that's a lot of barriers. Mm-hmm. It makes something completely inaccessible. Mm-hmm. And it also doesn't help prepare people for the future, that we're going to be in a world where we have to live with various types of artificial intelligence, et cetera.
Right.
And so I think we have to really think about pretty broadly the impacts it's going to have on higher education. I personally, I believe things like the humanities, the arts, all these areas, obviously we're going to have continuous sort of growth and understanding within the sciences, but I do think the humanities and the arts, et cetera, are going to take a critical role in human society. As we start advancing the use of AI in our everyday lives, because I think we're going to have some other crises that emerge with human identity and how humans see themselves, because we often see ourselves in jobs, and it's going to impact job. You know, we can go down the path, but I don't know how far down you want to go.
Yeah. Right. No, well, that makes me think, first of all, really glad you said how important those humanities are going to be as a humanities person, right? My background is in art history. That, even though the focus, I would say, in the last 10 years in a lot of higher ed, and where a lot of the, honestly, the funds and the money goes to is STEM, STEAM type of things, right? We want to have our, you know, certainly in the United States, we want to improve that. You know, I see that in our government funding and our National Science Foundation grants and things like that. But these questions are going to emerge about, well, what is the ethical use, right, of AI?
Right.
And how do our categories change, or how do we understand what used to be the definition of something, and what is the definition of it now? And when you were talking about that, it really made me think of something that I learned when I was studying art history, which was really the value of art and the thinking about art and what happened in the early 20th century with a movement like Dadaism, or the Dada movement with Marcel Duchamp, who did crazy things like take an already manufactured item like a crass urinal, turn it on its side, sign it with a fake name and call it art and called it a fountain, right? And I was like mad, actually, as a student, young student. I was like, no, that's not art. That you have to like use your hands, right? You have to have a real skill. You have to, right? You have to have a lot of training. You have to make it look real, you know, because I was ancient art, so everything was like Greek sculpture, and you know, I'm like, none of this abstract stuff, I can't handle it. But it wasn't until a couple years later, when I was actually teaching Dadaism and in like a course 1400 to the present, that I just really became enamored with and began to love how Duchamp made art available for everyone, how it's more about the idea, and how it was made equalized in some ways, the ability to be an artist, and just changed my whole perception on it. Now, of course, I have incredible love for the talent of great artists, right? That's why I loved art history. It's like, I don't have that at all. I am not one of those artists that's also an art historian. I just, not at all. But to see how the philosophy about art and methods and things like that made me understand this in a more complete way. And I can see that too. We're going to have all these questions about, okay, well, if AI is encroaching, let's say, in this particular area, how much is it no longer that area? Is it no longer what we would call art, right? Is it no longer this or that? And we need to have those ethical conversations as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's tons of conversations that we have to have. So I think there's tons of conversations we're going to have around what is humanity's role as we move forward with this new technology. I mean, it's like any technology, this is just a tool that, like everything else, but the impact that this tool can have, because it goes beyond what we know is a common tool, it goes beyond, you know, a hammer and screwdriver as we know it, because or even a smartphone or any modern technology, because what it is, it's a tool that potentially can create other tools. It's a tool that can technically, in some form, think, whether it can think for itself, that's a whole nother question. You know, so there's a ton of potential for this to really be a transformative tool throughout society. And it is going to change the way we interact with one another. It's going to change the way we, you know, conduct commerce, the way we, and there's so many things that impact our impact, that has the potential to impact, that it is going to truly transform the human experience, both externally and internally, and who we are and how we get to know ourselves. You know, what does human agency mean? What does human identity mean? All these sort of things that are somewhat predefined in society as we currently have it, it's going to change. It's going to change.
Yeah, there is. There's so much that we could discuss and talk about. So I wanted to get into some specifics, I thought.
Right.
Because, wow, we could have 2 or 3 hours on this, and I like it. But we'll try to stick to less than an hour. But one of the things that you brought up and I wanted to kind of go further in is that it's talking about UDL and AI specifically. How can they or do they inform or support things like a competency-based learning or specifically like various other forms of assessment? How do you see UDL and AI working towards those, that kind of column of the UDL guidelines, that assessment, action, and expression and things?
Yeah, so I think it makes complete sense. Before we got on, we were talking about the fact that, you know, the media and everyone's kind of hot on this. I've had a number of interviews with reporters and what the media likes to highlight is the fact that, you know, students are cheating. They're using these large language models to write papers and such. And to me, again, that's a minor sort of issue. It's maybe a first step in consideration of how AI is going to transform learning. But what I kind of say to, in fact, I just said earlier this week to a reporter, you know, if we're only using a single form of measurement in a classroom setting or in a learning environment, then we're really missing the boat anyhow.
Yeah.
So if an AI, if a large language model AI can come in and a student can use it to write a paper, then we're probably not fully assessing the learning that's taking place in that classroom.
Yeah.
In a way that we should be. Mm-hmm. Now, there can be some argument that, especially with doctoral students, for instance, they need to learn how to write articles, and therefore writing is a critical function of what they're going to do. Therefore, we have to assess it. And yeah, I get that. But you know, we've been using, spell check, grammar check, more sophisticated mm-hmm. things, you know, in, of that nature for a while.
Yeah.
And AI is only one step further than that. So it's part of that process, and it has to be actually integrated into that process. So where does UDL play a role in this discussion? It's at the core of this discussion. It's at the heart of this discussion. When we think about the way our modern learning environments should be designed, they should be designed with a focus on all learners. Mm-hmm. They should be designed with a base level support of multiple means. Now, AI can play a role in that.
Yes.
And we don't need to just focus on action expression. Obviously, we can go into engagement and representation as well. However, on just the basics of what it means to provide provide for assessment, it supports the notion of we need to measure on multiple means. AI can be a part of that. And actually, as we get into multimodal AI, which is forthcoming and is kind of going to be the new big thing here pretty soon, it even plays a role in that sort of discussion. We need to provide for multiple means.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, it overcomes this issue. Now, when we look at multiple means, the first part of your question dealt with competency-based learning, I think.
Yeah.
So if we get into the basics of what are we measuring, I think we start off with competency. We start off mm-hmm. with competency. Like, what are the competencies we're attempting to measure? And then we marry that with supporting multiple means for action and expression. It's at the base of how we do that work. Now, what I'm doing in my classes, for instance, is I've encouraged the students to use AI.
Mm-hmm.
I've always provided for, you know, I try to walk the walk, right? So
yeah.
We support multiple means of action expression in everything they do.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to, we do a weekly reflection, for instance, on the materials or modules that students had to go through the week before they came to class. Mm-hmm. And they are supported in multiple means in doing that. You know, you can do this in writing. You can do this by developing a visualization. You could do it through video. You could do it through audio. I mean, mm-hmm. a graphic organizer, all these sort of things come into play. And I've encouraged the students, now they're future teachers, so I've encouraged the students to try new things, explore. And then we use AI, if at all possible, to do it. And then mm-hmm. let us know you're doing it, because we want to know. We're learners with you.
Yeah.
We want to go through that learning process with you. And then what we've done is we create competency-based rubrics for measuring the outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, 90-95% of the time, we're using the same rubric across all forms,
yeah,
right, of expression. So, you know, we can measure because we're looking for the competency. We're measuring based on a competency. So that's mm-hmm. what's in the rubric.
Yeah.
The medium in which they're turning it in, or the medium in which they're submitting, demonstrating that competency.
Not important.
Cool.
Yeah, or not as important.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Right. And I found that just in the last year, a lot of my focus when I'm talking about UDL has been so much on the designing by the instructor about really what the goal is and how to pinpoint it. And mm-hmm. that's like so much work that we have to be doing and realizing, mm-hmm. you know, all those barriers that we had been putting in when we're like, write a paper, even though you don't care if it's a paper. You really just want to know, do you understand these five concepts? Can you explain them? Whether it's in a paper mm-hmm. or not, depending, you know, on your field. that it's that process, the design process of coming up with like, what would the rubric look like so that right. it would catch, right, all of that competency that could be shown in multiple forms. And so the rubric isn't things like 5 pages, double spaced, Times New Roman. That's not the rubric, right? The rubric is, did you explain these 3 concepts? Did you give right. examples of how it is applied in the 21st century, right? You know, and it could be you're making, you know, Leonardo, the AI, you know, visual tool, come up with a, you know, an image that explains or something like that. So, yeah, that's matching or getting a rubric that gets to really what we want. And I think so much of my life, certainly before UDL, and understanding that was that construct irrelevance. And AI, I think, is very helpful in that can help us take out that and kind of understand where that competency is. Like, what is it we want to pinpoint? Let's be specific and then have the flexible means to get there. AI can help with that.
Right. I think it's critical that the design process, I mean, mm-hmm. it's something that, you know, initially I think people, when they kind of get into UDL, depending on where they're coming from, if they come in from a design sort of field or understanding, they bring mm-hmm. that to bear right away because it's just innate into who they are.
Yeah.
I think for people that aren't coming from that sort of perspective, the process of design and, you know, when I teach it to undergraduate pre-service educators, we often focus on design thinking because it's pretty simple. And one would think like, oh, educators, they should be designers. Well, historically, they're not trained yeah. as designers. Historically, they're trained as do these things in this environment mm-hmm. and kids will learn. And don't think about that. But when you go start with a goal-based design process, it makes so much sense. It makes mm-hmm. so much sense to end up in saying, oh, well, you can have multiple means of action expression because it really doesn't matter. And actually one of the hardest things though, for the undergraduates I've worked with, teach this class every fall where we deep dive into this stuff with undergraduates mm-hmm. and it's always hard, but this should be measured this way. Well, why mm-hmm. is that? Where is the competency or the goal associated with needing to measure it that way? Mm-hmm. What's the way I was always done with me?
Yeah. It's always, right? Yeah.
And it's always their model. It's their tradition, their model that they mm-hmm. had. And I think one of the things that AI is going to help us in doing is it kind of puts the old models aside. Mm-hmm. Because that's an interesting sort of, okay, so now let's bring AI to the table. Should we measure learning the same mm-hmm. way? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, we can't do that any longer, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's always interesting because one of the things we've talked about in the UDL community for a long time around, for instance, accessibility and UDL is a chicken egg sort of argument, right? A Trojan horse. Is accessibility the Trojan horse for UDL, or is UDL the Trojan horse for accessibility? You know, that's always kind of been a kind of an inside sort of conversation at the summit mm-hmm. and other sort of venues. We end up geeking out over such a conversation. It's interesting to me where AI plays a role in that because everyone's let's talk about the use of AI in schools. Okay, mm-hmm. well, again, if we don't have the environment designed at the very foundation, with all learners in mind, fundamentally designed with the focus on all learners, using things like UDL, mm-hmm. then adding AI to it is going to cause a huge, huge disruption.
Yeah.
Right? A bigger disruption than it would with AI
yeah.
already instituted.
Yeah. Like when I think about how we might grade or assess, right, this learning, it used to be a skill, I would say. Mm-hmm. It used to be a skill to say, all right, well, you need to write 500 words on this versus 1,000 words, right? Mm-hmm. That would be something that could show your understanding of something and maybe show twice your understanding if it's twice as many words, maybe. But now we can easily input something into AI and say, make this 500, make this 1,000 words, make this a 20-page mm-hmm. paper, make this a Elizabethan sonnet form, right? Mm-hmm. Make this a poem. And I'm just talking about the language ones rather than any of the other ones. And mm-hmm. yeah, so it just seemed like our assessment was focused on a really small area. And now we have such an almost an unlimited, just a great amount of outputs that we can look for in our students and that we want. I mean, I think of all the jobs that did not exist when I was in college, you know, social media coordinator, that didn't exist, right? All of the jobs that so many of our young students coming out of college are really adept at too, because they've been much more in tune to more of a digital world than at least I was growing up. I'm not going to say they're digital natives or anything, because everybody's different, but that there's just so much more. And we in higher ed often lean on that tradition we've already talked about, that we're very close into. Well, it takes a long time to change our ways of doing things and how we get accredited and, you know, all of these other things that if we're going to add AI, like you said, it's like, no, we kind of have to redesign, just mm-hmm. not just saying, okay, well, we're going to add AI in here. And so the first thing, as you said, people do is say, no, we're not going to use AI. It's going to mess everything up. And instead of just, all right, well, we're going to add AI, I think we need to break it down and redesign with that AI from the beginning. We've just got to include and have our students knowing how to use it, that they're not afraid and it's not automatically cheating, that it's now something because it's everywhere. I use it every day, all the time. I mean,
I think I was talking to one of my historian colleagues here, and you know, we were equating it to the printing press. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's been one of the conversations, like, what sort of impact is AI going to have on society and learning? Well, what sort of impact did the printing press have on society and learning? Yeah. Or written word, if you want to even go back further, right? I think that's where we're at. I think, and so to think it's going to fundamentally shift the way humans learn, yes, it will. Now, do we have to embed from the very beginning the way we think about the learning process and the way students demonstrate their understanding, the way students engage within the environment? And yeah, we have to, that should be, we need to question all of that. And the reality is those of us who have been kind of in this UDL area for a long time, we've kind of thought, hey, we need to redesign education system. You know, PK-12 and PK-21 and so on, and really across mm-hmm. all environments, be it higher ed, K-12, corporate, whatever it is. And many of us have been mm-hmm. involved in that process. We've kind of been thinking about this for a while. So if you haven't started that process, then you probably should start, and AI should be part of that conversation.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads me into the next part that you brought up that I wanted to ask you about. Well, that you brought up mm-hmm. before that made me say, I've got to ask him this question when I interview him. And that's about personalized learning. So, which is to me not the same as the way we've always done it. We had a particularly static environment. So I wanted to ask you about the relationship that you see between AI and UDL and personalized learning in higher education. And also, could you just give me and our listeners your definition of personalized learning as well?
Yeah, I don't have it written out in front of me, but so the informal sort of definition of personalized learning is learning, a learning environment, learning experience that's designed for each individual learner, right? So And that includes taking into consideration variables such as obviously engagement, obviously the way information is being represented, obviously the ways in which the students are demonstrating and expressing their understanding. But it also can mean things like, and things that we don't often talk about in the UDL community on a day-to-day, is things like the pacing of the instruction, right? It could mean, and so it can go further than just a normal UDL-based environment and get into more things like the pacing of instruction. I mean, as an example. So the relationship with UDL and personalized learning has been around for a long time. And in fact, back, 10, 15 years ago now, the University of Kansas, CAST, founders of UDL, and NASD, which is the National, Association of State Special Education Directors, had a center on online learning and students with disabilities. Within that national center, which was supported by the Office of Special Education Programs in the U.S. Department of Education, we had a number of projects that studied personalized learning environments. Within that work, that we were looking at places across the country and spent 2 years pretty in depth with one location. There was a K-12 environment that developed a competency-based personalized learning environment for about 7,500 students that was UDL-based. But what we found out in that work and kind of the work going on since then is that much of the environments that we consider personalized, right? The environments that we consider to be more personalized learning environments have UDL alignment to them. And it's, again, goes back to that same conversation we just had, which is that UDL is at the base, at the very foundation of how we design effective learning environments for all students. So once you set the foundation, and it's a stable foundation based on UDL, then we can do the add-ons, if you will. We can personalize it, right? Or we can have a non-personalized environment as well. But in these personalized environments that were really designed for each student, and so some of the variables of these environments, is each individual student had a personalized learning plan. Now, be it that it was the K-12 environments that we were studying, some of the students also had individualized educational programs, or IEPs, right? That doesn't exist in higher education, but each student had these you know, learning plans. And each learning plan would be, a student would sit down with an adult each week, roughly every week, to sit down and figure out where they were at in their learning. And then students took different pathways that were competency-based pathways based on UDL to support those learning outcomes. So what does this mean in higher education? I think what personalized learning would mean for higher education is that, again, students would come in and kind of conceptualize a individualized learning plan. Mm-hmm. Now, some of those people that would come in and support an individualized learning plan would be going into fields or professions that had maybe certification to them, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so again, we're going to be looking at more competency-based sort of certifications, et cetera. And we can get into a whole bunch of conversation around what this could mean from credentialing, micro-credentialing, to just competency-based credentials, to various sort of forms that students could come to demonstrate their knowledge of, demonstrate their ability to complete. And it could, again, it takes away the notion in some ways, like similar to what it did in the K-12 settings where it shifted time and place, etc. what it would do in higher education is the same. Because what you could suddenly do is you can imagine that some people, some students in your classes learn faster than mm-hmm. others, some learn a little slower than others. Mm-hmm. But what if students weren't made to sit through the whole thing or sit at the same pace?
Yeah.
How would that transform the way we taught and the way we did things? Well, conceptually, people could say, yeah, well, I learn a little bit slower here, or I learn a little bit faster here. This is where I have lots of variability. And it made conceptual sense. Mm-hmm. But it didn't make any functional sense because we had no way to make that happen. It was nearly impossible, especially in higher education,
right,
to truly personalize learning. But what if now, Lillian, rather than just you as an individual,
right,
you had literally an agent that would go out and help support yeah. students
mm-hmm. right.
do this work.
Yeah.
And all your students, as a benefit to coming to your university, had access to a Lillian agent.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough one.
Say it 10 times over.
Oh, yeah. Can't do it.
But they had access to an agent that was made of you
mm-hmm.
and could provide them feedback and guidance and support. And we already see some of this coming out. For instance, there's, you know, apps out there right now that I got a notification from one of my apps on my phone just last night that mm-hmm. I can now, you know, communicate with my PDFs. I can talk to them.
Wow. Really?
And yeah. And there's books out there that, you know, zaps out there right now where you're reading a book and rather than asking a teacher a question, you can ask the book a question about the book.
Yeah.
And essentially what they've done is they've, you know, used large language models to support some level of artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. We can argue as to whether how intelligent it is, but some form of artificial intelligence into these things. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you can ask questions and have dialogue with books or with PDFs. And it's the first step towards that.
Yeah.
But now I can suddenly talk to Lillian anytime I want to as
right.
a student.
Mm-hmm.
And I can kind of personalize that experience. And UDL and competency-based sort of pathways make it feasible for that to take place.
Mm-hmm.
Make it feasible for that to take place. But now we go back to the first question that we talked about, mm-hmm. which is how is this all going to transform, et cetera. This is where the humanities and the human experience
yeah.
kind of matter. And because I think one of the things we can very quickly get to, or people can very easily visualize, well, people are only interacting with these AIs all the time. They can do things more readily, more quickly, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it kind of throws away the need for human interaction. Well, that's where we have to kind of put the pause down, right? We have to say
yeah.
human to human interaction is going to be still important. And we have to design mm-hmm. sort of experiences. And how is it going to transform the education system? Well, we may still have this very personalized sort of experience. But I think what we have to do as folks in higher education is really think about the ethics, as you kind of brought up earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The need for human interaction. We need to think about, you know, all these sort of things. These are the bigger sort of questions we have to have.
Mm-hmm.
And but getting to the primary point of the question, personalized mm-hmm. learning, competency-based learning, UDL,
mm-hmm.
they all go hand in hand. And then when we add AI to that, you know, architectural sort of underpinning,
yeah.
you have a lot of great potential there. And I think it makes it more feasible than it's ever made it. Where we've used AI just slightly in the past on some of these studies have used it, it's kind of in the plumbing. But I think what AI is going to do to this sort of personalized learning, competency-based learning, UDL sort of experience is it allows it to make it more feasible for more people. In some ways, yeah. it can make it more easier and accessible, easier to access for more people.
Yeah.
Because you could, in some ways, provide for that.
Well, you were talking about having like Lillian agents, like a Lil AI, yeah. right? That yeah. would be so helpful for especially, I mean, even just the one thing you brought up, like pacing. The fact that most colleges have a 15-week long semester and you're taking four yeah. or five classes, right, in those 15 weeks, that's not optimal for everybody anyway. And I know there are some universities that go on trimesters or quarters right. or, you know, right. or two nine-week sessions of two classes, right, or something like that. But the thing is, everybody at that school is on whatever that schedule is, right? right? And it's just the way we've always done it. And why do we have summers off? You know, mostly because we had farmers that would have to, you know, take time off in right. the summer, right? And right. it's just created this a little bit arcane system that now if we have AI that we could, somebody could move up the pace for some things, like for the knowledge acquisition, yeah. we can do that. But if somebody's in week two and somebody else in the same class is in week six, but we need to have a discussion and hear about different perspectives from each one, that's not necessarily going to work because we're in like two different time areas of the class. So having, you know, one part of it maybe is in that pacing and I can give, you've already made it into this here. You can work on this for the next week, but we're also going to come together and have this perspective sharing or whatever we need so that right. we all are hearing from each other at a different time. It would just be a different design of the class rather than we're all going at the same pace and we all hit this thing at the same time. And I could see how we could run things differently, you know, especially if somebody has a different background already in the material than somebody else because they're in a different point in the course. I mean, we could use that to our advantage too, I could certainly see. But
well, and there could be agents that do that, right? I mean, the idea, you could have other student agents as well. I mean, mm-hmm. so it's really, yeah, I mean, it goes both ways. And so there's, mm-hmm. I mean, it really does open up whole new sort of avenues and conversations around the education of students.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the conversations I've been having a lot with colleagues lately is the idea of what is college for? Like, what are we getting out of college? Or what does a student want out of college? And I think you ask different students, you'll get different answers. You ask different legislators, you'll get different answers. But I like the idea of that students are getting knowledge, right? They right. need to learn something. They're also getting a credential, something they can take to an employer. I have a diploma or I have a badge or I know how to use Excel or I can do statistics, right? Some right. sort of credential that says they're useful in some way. And then the other thing is the experience. So, and not everybody wants the same experience. There are some who want to go away and be on a college campus and be at a big rah-rah football school, right, or something. And so that could be the overall experience, but also thinking about a classroom experience. You know, I want to be in a classroom where we're discussing ideas and having a seminar kind of thing. Or it could also be online. Like I learn much better when I can have my time to do it asynchronously. I can kind of plan my day. Or also a returning student, somebody who has a full-time job, right? Different experiences that go along with the credential and with the knowledge that we have to get. And I can definitely see how the addition of AI into how we can design those different things is going to provide personalized learning, I would say, or help us to provide right. that for more, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I definitely think it's going to be able to enhance our ability to personalize the learning process. Mm-hmm. you know, again, we have seen some success at this within K-12, some K-12 settings. However, there's lots of variability, I guess. And how that's designed. And it's not always designed in the most efficient and appropriate manner. I mean, so the idea, for instance, that in K-12 settings, I mean, what we've seen in some of that personalized learning is students sitting in front of computers
yeah.
all day, every day. And I would argue that that's not actually the purpose or the reason that kids should be coming to school is to sit in front of a computer.
Right.
I mean, it should be more of an interactive, again, multiple means of the ability to, you know, engage to and to take, you know, take action, express their sort of understanding is critical. The human experience as we go forward is going to be an important piece of the puzzle that we need to make sure we do not forget, that we don't forget that piece, because it's critical that we, that humanity as it is kind of stays at the center of the discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we started out talking about, it's because we value learner variability, because we value that people are different. That's how we need to design whatever our learning environment is. Yeah. So I'm actually going to squish down the last two questions because I think they're related and we've sort of been dancing around them already. But in your talk that I got to see you give, which I appreciated, you asked the audience a couple questions, and I'm going to throw one of those questions back at you, that, to give, some more ideas, but also leads into CITL that you have at University of Kansas. So you asked, how might AI impact teaching and learning experience in your specific field? And you are preparing teachers in special education. And kind of following that, can you have created the CITL at University of Kansas, which is the Center for Innovation, Design, and Digital Learning. And thought maybe you could talk about how that might impact teaching and learning in your field and what's on the horizon for you.
Yeah, well, thank you. CIDL, Center for Innovation, Design, and Digital Learning, CIDDL.org, is a federally funded National Technical Assistance Center housed out of the University of Kansas in partnership with CAST and the University of Central Florida, as well as the Materi Group. So our center is focused on really helping support the integration and use of technology, specifically educational technology, within higher education and special education, early childhood, related service personnel preparation. So our primary audience in that group is our higher education faculty members. Although we also have a large contingency of folks that follow us from the K-12 sector as well, but primarily higher education is our focus in that group. And so the big question you asked me, which is, you know, how might AI impact the field? I mean, it's something that we are dealing with every day at CITL and thinking about. And we put out a number of documents on how AI is impacting and is and will impact the education of all learners, and how it's impacting those of us who practice in higher education and supporting pre-service educators, related service personnel, or early childhood folks, and even future training future faculty members, because that's actually another group of ours that we focus on. So we've put some things together. So people can go to CIDL, CIDDL.org, to look at some of that. But initially and off the top of the things that we need to talk about, and we are often thinking about, I mean, like we said earlier, one of the biggest questions we get is how do we get these, how do we get to identify and how do we get these students to stop using AI to write their papers? And we're like, whoa, well, that's not our biggest problem right now. But I think how it's going to affect the teaching and learning experience specific within our field and within special education is that we have to prepare educators, and future leaders in the field to understand the impact of AI within their own teaching and learning process. And then we have to have those deeper conversations around the ethics of that. We have to have conversations around, you know, how to appropriately use AI, just like any other tool, in their own teaching and learning process as they're going through it as future educators or future related service providers, whether it's supporting students through things like new forms of assistive technology or using supporting better access and accessibility for students with disabilities. So in special ed, we're having this sort of meaningful conversation of where AI kind of plays a role. Mm-hmm. And then we are kind of getting into the future sort of conversation of what are things that we need to talk about related to human interaction. One of the largest things we're starting to see in the AI field is that humans love interacting with AIs. Mm-hmm. Even from a social sort of perspective, like an agent. And we talked about agents a few minutes ago, but, you know, what's it mean if someone just interacts with the agent continually and doesn't really interact with other humans? Is that a problem? Mm-hmm. Well, what's the role of an educator in our field to help facilitate human-to-human contact and things like that? So we have to kind of get into these conversations with people. We're starting that thought process. We have right now, and in fact, that is coming together. We have an AI blueprint that's coming together that is going to be rolling out, I'm guessing, in February. We're mm-hmm. kind of getting the right, crossing the T's and dotting the I's. But we have a national kind of work group that's been putting together this document in a number of areas, from ethics to research to teaching and learning. And that'll be rolling out of the Siddle Center, hopefully, like I said, in February. Mm-hmm. And it's we're seeing it kind of as a living document where we got these groups of people together from across the country to kind of put two cents together on these things and where we're at in, spring of 2024, knowing that it could change again in 6 to 8 months, 10 months.
Yeah.
And the idea is that we'd hopefully be able to update that. So that's, mm-hmm. those are things that we're thinking about and things that we're shifting and thinking about for the future. But Siddle is a great, I think, arena. And for people in special education and early childhood and related services to do that, but probably anyone from any field can also join in and come join the fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot of fun to think about, that's for sure.
Well, and the idea is like taking it and looking at across disciplines, right? So it's not just taking what is going on in education, but what do we know again about things going on in the humanities? What are AI researchers doing? And how is that? Mm-hmm. What's research telling us? It's coming down the pike, and then how do we change? How does that play a role in the way we design more effective environments? Hopefully, with UDL at the center of those environments.
Absolutely. Or
at the foundation of those environments, because the human should be at the center, but putting you.
Right. Exactly. Right. I think the whole thread, the through line or plumb line of our whole conversation is that human centeredness, the human matters, that honoring and valuing the variability of that learner, and then creating and designing a flexible environment. And now that we have this other amazing tool, besides the knowledge about UDL and that flexibility, having the AI to really, it seems, accelerate the ability to create all those flexibilities. I mean, when I first started with UDL, the problem I would get when talking to people is, oh, that's so much work. Well, now I could put into an AI and say, can you UDL this assignment and give me five different ways that students could actually perform this? And so now the work is cut down immeasurably too.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, there's so much that we can do. And I really appreciate this conversation because you really brought in the overall ethics and the thinking and the philosophy really that we have to be putting in the forefront before we just start, which is something I do, just start, oh, let's play with this and let's just add it on before running back to say how we're going to lay these foundations. So, James, I just want to thank you so much for your time in explaining your thinking and how long you've actually been doing this and so much that you've done for our UDL community. I just want to thank you so much for your time and thoughts today to be on the Think UDL podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, and I think it's a great podcast. I'm pleased to be here, and it's great to spend time with you.
You can follow the Think UDL podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to find out when new episodes will be released, and also see transcripts and additional materials at the thinkudl.org website. Thank you again to our sponsor, TextHelp. TextHelp is focused on helping all people learn, understand, and communicate through the use of digital education and accessibility tools. TextHelp and its people are working towards a world where difference, disability, and language are no longer barriers to learning and succeeding, with over 50 million users worldwide. The TextHelp suite of products includes Read and Write, Equatio, and OrbitNote, and they work alongside existing platforms such as Microsoft Office and G Suite and enable them to be integrated quickly into any classroom or workspace with ease. TextHelp has changed the lives of millions worldwide and strives to impact the literacy and understanding of 1 billion people by 2030. Visit text.help/learnmore, that's LEARNMORE, to unlock unlimited learner potential. The music on the podcast was performed by the Odyssey Quartet, comprised of Rex Shepherd, David Pate, Bill Falwell, and Jose Cochez, and I am your host, Lillian Nave. Thank you for joining us on the Think UDL podcast.